I want you to imagine a scenario for a second. Picture a memory. And not just, where you left your keys, but a haunting, deeply traumatic memory.
Right.
The kind that keeps you awake at night. The kind that just invades your daily life out of nowhere with this vivid, terrifying clarity, making your heart race and your palms sweat.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I want you to imagine sitting down, moving your eyes back and forth in a few very specific patterns, and in just 6 minutes,
6 minutes.
literally 6 minutes, that memory is fundamentally rewired. Like the visceral horror is simply gone. I mean, it sounds entirely like science fiction, right? Like something out of a futuristic movie where we just plug in a USB drive and reprogram the human brain.
It really does. It sounds completely unbelievable because, I mean, we are so culturally conditioned to think of emotional healing as something that requires, years of intensive talking.
Yeah, unpacking your childhood.
Exactly. Unpacking your childhood and slowly, painfully rebuilding your psyche. So the idea of a 6-minute intervention feels almost counterintuitive, maybe even a little insulting, frankly, to everything we've been taught about the gravity of psychology and trauma.
Right, because if it were that easy, everyone would just do it.
Right.
But that is exactly what we are looking at today in this deep dive. We are looking at the actual clinical notes of Clint Matheny, specifically a section from his toolbox for emotional health. And he claims this isn't sci-fi at all. It's a procedure called EMI, or eye movement integration.
Which is fascinating.
Okay, let's unpack this,
Yeah.
because I read through this source material, and we aren't just talking about some fringe theory here. We have documented cases, specific physiological protocols, and to be totally honest, a concept that completely breaks my understanding of how memories actually work.
And to really understand it, we need to completely shift our perspective. We need to explore not just what this therapy is, but how the physical brain actually processes trauma. We're going to look at why neurotherapeutic methods like EMI are completely changing the landscape of emotional health. I mean, this isn't about giving you a new philosophical framework to analyze your feelings.
No, not at all.
It's about looking at the mechanical, biological ways your nervous system stores and retrieves distress. And more importantly, how you can physically alter that storage.
Okay, so before we get into the exact mechanics of how, moving your eyes can somehow rewrite a trauma response, we really need to set the stage. Because I know right now someone listening is thinking, wait, eye movements? Are they talking about EMDR?
Oh,
Like,
absolutely.
I've seen that on social media. And they would be completely forgiven for making that jump, because when I first saw the notes, that's exactly where my mind went to. But the history here is a lot stranger than I realized.
It is a fascinating historical parallel, really. You're right. Most people who have looked into trauma therapy or PTSD treatment, they've heard of EMDR,
Right.
which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's very well known, very widely practiced.
Right, it's the really famous one. But Clint Matheny's notes outline that EMI, the eye movement integration procedure we are focusing on, is actually a distinct, separate thing. So where did this come from?
Well, it was developed by a woman named Connery Andreas back in the late 1980s. And the source material notes that Clint Matheny actually started using it clinically around, I think, 1991.
Okay.
But here is the wild part. EMI emerged at the exact same time that Francine Shapiro was across the country working on developing EMDR.
See, this is my favorite kind of historical anomaly. It's like when Isaac Newton and Gottfried Wilhelm Leibniz independently invented calculus at the exact same time without ever talking to each other.
Yes,
It's a parallel scientific discovery. But I mean, how does that happen? How do two different people invent eye movement trauma therapy at the exact same time?
what's fascinating here is that both of these methods, EMI and EMDR, were inspired by the exact same accidental observation. Yeah. Practitioners back then were doing a specific therapeutic procedure called the NLP trauma phobia cure. And today, just for context, that procedure is often referred to as RTM, or the reconsolidation of traumatic memories.
Okay, hold on. Let me hit the brakes because we are throwing around a lot of acronyms and I want to make sure I'm following. You said the NLP trauma phobia cure. What does NLP actually stand for? I've heard the letters, but in the context of eyes, I have absolutely no idea what it means.
Well, that's a great catch. NLP stands for neuro-linguistic programming.
Okay.
At its core, it's a psychological approach that looks at how our neurology, so our brain and nervous system,
Right.
interacts with our linguistics,
Right.
basically our language and how we talk to ourselves, and how that interaction programs our behavioral patterns. It's basically the study of how the brain maps reality.
Okay, so these practitioners in the 80s are doing this NLP trauma cure. What was the accidental observation?
They noticed something entirely involuntary happening. While guiding clients through this phobia cure, the clients had their eyes closed. But beneath their closed eyelids, the practitioners noticed the clients' eyes were rapidly darting around in very specific, repetitive patterns whenever they were processing something highly intense.
Which just blows my mind. Like, the clients have their eyes closed, they aren't looking at anything in the room, but their eyes are tracking something invisible.
Exactly.
So if both the creator of EMDR and the creator of EMI were looking at the exact same closed eye movements during therapy, how do they end up with two different therapies? Like, what makes EMI distinct?
Well, both innovators recognized that the brain's internal control panel seemed to be linked to the eyes, but they took slightly different paths from there. EMDR focused largely on bilateral stimulation, moving the eyes side to side to keep both hemispheres of the brain active. EMI, however, placed a much greater emphasis on something within NLP called eye-accessing cues. They realized that the field of psychology in the late 80s was stumbling upon the doorway to something massive, which is memory reconsolidation.
Memory reconsolidation. The notes mention that today, EMI, EMDR, and RTM are all categorized under this umbrella of memory reconsolidation techniques.
Yes, they are.
But I really want to dig into those NLP eye-accessing cues you just mentioned, because this is where EMI really differentiates itself. And honestly, it's where I need to push back a little bit.
Go for it.
So the source material explicitly states that EMI relies heavily on these cues and that these eye accessing cues are accurate about 80% of the time.
Right.
The theory goes that if you look up and to the left, you are accessing a visual memory. If you look down and to the right, you are accessing a physical feeling.
Are you saying the brain is organized like a physical filing cabinet?
Well,
where if a client moves their eyes a certain way, it's literally sliding open the visual memory drawer or the auditory processing drawer. I mean, that feels a little too perfectly mechanistic to me.
Human brains are messy.
It does sound overly mechanistic when you describe it as a filing cabinet, for sure. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at the definition provided in the text. EMI is defined as a neurotherapeutic method for accessing and integrating traumatic memories. The key word there is neurotherapeutic.
Meaning it's acting directly on the nervous system, not just the thinking mind.
Exactly. Traditional talk therapy, it operates on the premise that if we cognitively understand our trauma, if we can tell a good, coherent story about it, we can heal it.
Right.
But trauma isn't just a story we tell ourselves. It is a physiological experience deeply lodged in the nervous system. When trauma happens, the brain wires a specific sensory input, like a sight, a sound, a smell, directly to a severe survival response. The eyes aren't just cameras looking at the outside world. They are directly wired into the cranial nerves and the brain's internal information processing centers.
So the 80% accuracy of these eye accessing cues, it's less like opening a literal filing cabinet drawer and more like watching the gears of a machine turn from the outside.
Yes, exactly.
Like, you can see which sensory network of the brain is currently engaged based on where the eyes are tracking.
Precisely. It's neurological routing. But to really understand how EMI actually fixes the trauma, we need to understand what memory reconsolidation actually is physically. Think of memory reconsolidation like glass blowing.
Glass blowing. Mm. Okay, I'm intrigued.
So when a highly traumatic event happens, the memory is like a glob of molten glass that suddenly drops onto a freezing cold floor.
Ooh, okay.
It cools instantly, freezing into this jagged, sharp, very dangerous shape.
And every time you recall the memory, it's like brushing up against that sharp glass and your nervous system gets cut. You feel the panic all over again.
Exactly. And traditional therapy sometimes just involves staring at the sharp glass, describing its edges, and learning how to avoid stepping on it.
Yeah, a coaching mechanism.
Right. But memory reconsolidation actually picks that jagged piece up and puts it back into the furnace. By recalling the memory in a specific, targeted way, the memory becomes molten and malleable again. The neural pathways open up.
Oh, wow. So when the memory is molten, what do the eye movements do?
Well, when you purposefully direct those eye movements in all these different directions while the memory is open, you are taxing the brain's working memory.
Okay.
The eye movements act like the glass blower's tools. They physically reshape that molten memory, stripping away the intense physiological arousal before the memory cools down and saves again.
Wow.
It cools back into a smooth, harmless marble. It integrates it back into a healthy neural network. The memory of the event remains, but the visceral horror is gone.
That is an incredible way to picture it. Okay, but theory is just theory. I can hear the skepticism out there. And the source material doesn't just leave us with the glass-blowing metaphor.
No, it doesn't.
It gives us a concrete, extreme example from 1995 to prove just how powerful this neurotherapeutic approach can be in practice. Because if this therapy works purely on the nervous system, bypassing language entirely, does that mean it works even if the therapist and the patient can't speak to each other?
Yes. And that brings us to the case study with the Bosnian Muslim man.
I want to set the scene carefully here because the details are intense, but they are absolutely crucial for understanding the magnitude of this.
They are.
In 1995, Clint Matheny worked with a man who had survived 15 months in a Serbian concentration camp before being freed by UN forces. This man had been in the United States for only 6 months.
Just an unimaginable level of trauma.
Truly. His primary symptoms were severe. He had chronic insomnia, sleeping less than 2 hours a night. He had recurrent, vivid flashbacks of witnessing his best friend die in his arms. And he had a persistent, intrusive smell associated with death that just followed him everywhere.
Those are classic severe PTSD symptoms. The brain is entirely stuck in the loop of the traumatic event. The glass is incredibly sharp.
But here's where it gets really interesting, the language barrier. The client spoke very limited English, and Clint Matheny spoke only English.
Yeah, that's a huge factor.
In a traditional talk therapy setting, this is a massive, almost insurmountable roadblock. I mean, how do you guide someone through cognitive processing if you literally do not share vocabulary for their pain?
You generally can't. You can offer support, sure, but deep cognitive restructuring requires nuance that you just can't get across a severe language barrier.
Right. But because EMI is a neurotherapeutic method, it didn't require the client to speak perfectly about his trauma. Matheny didn't need to know the entire narrative story. He just needed the client to hold the molten memory in his mind while he guided his eye movements.
Exactly.
According to the text, Matheny actually has this on video. 6 minutes. Just 6 minutes of EMI.
And the physiological results of those 6 minutes are really the most telling part of this entire deep dive. The text says that after the procedure, the man was able to shift the vivid, colorful flashback imagery into a foggy, distant representation.
Wow.
And that overwhelming smell of death was transformed into a scent associated with life. The change was rapid, observable, and deeply physical.
Wait. Ground this for me. He was literally experiencing a phantom smell of death in the room constantly. And 6 minutes later, that smell was just gone, like flipped to a scent of life.
Yes. In clinical terms, we call that an olfactory hallucination. Okay. It highlights why neurotherapeutic interventions are so remarkable. Let's look at the purely sensory nature of this healing. It wasn't that he rationally decided he was safe now in the U.S. He didn't just tell himself a new positive story.
Right. He didn't just logic his way out of it.
Exactly. The literal visual color of the memory faded in his mind's eye. It became foggy, and the hallucinated smell completely inverted. This sensory shift is the absolute hallmark of true memory reconsolidation.
The glass marble cooled down smooth.
Exactly. When a memory is successfully reconsolidated, the physiological arousal attached to it is permanently stripped away. The memory becomes just a factual event of history rather than a present moment sensory assault on the nervous system.
It's incredible. And the text notes, this isn't an isolated incident. Matheny mentions another 7-minute video where Steve Andreas works with a Vietnam veteran using EMI.
Yeah.
Time and time again, we are looking at these rapid sub-10-minute interventions creating massive life-altering neurological shifts.
Which is incredibly encouraging, yes. But it also warrants a very serious, urgent conversation about application. Because when people hear this, the natural reaction is excitement.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because the natural reaction to hearing about a 6-minute miracle cure is, great, I have some bad memories, I have trauma, I'm going to pull up a YouTube video, dart my eyes around, and fix myself right now.
Right.
We need to immediately transition to the strict safety parameters outlined in the text, because this isn't a toy.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
The source material is very explicit about the guardrails here. EMI can be self-administered, but it comes with a critically high degree of caution.
The analogy I kept thinking of while reading the safety section is like buying an industrial-strength chemical stain remover for a piece of clothing.
Okay. Yeah.
You always, always test it on a tiny hidden corner of the fabric first. You don't just pour the whole bottle right on the center of your favorite shirt and hope for the best because it might burn a hole right through it.
That is a perfect analogy for how the nervous system works. The text outlines specific rules for self-administration. First, It is absolutely not for intense self-use without preparation.
Okay.
Second, the golden rule. You must test the procedure first on a mildly unpleasant emotional feeling. You only test on mild material first to see how your specific brain reacts.
Right, so don't start with your deepest, darkest childhood trauma. Start with, my coworker sent a passive-aggressive email today, and I'm still annoyed about it.
Exactly. Test the waters. And the third rule is perhaps the most critical for anyone attempting this. You must stop immediately if feelings of overwhelm, dissociation, or panic start to rise.
Let me stop you there, because this raises an important question. If all you were doing is moving your eyes around while thinking about a memory, why would that cause clinical dissociation or a panic attack?
This raises an important question indeed. It comes back to our capacity to handle our own trauma and the fact that we are dealing with biological mechanisms, not just thoughts. We have to remember that the brain isolated and locked away these traumatic memories for a reason.
Right, to protect you from the overwhelming sensory input of the original event.
It put the sharp glass in a reinforced box.
Yes, and when you engage in a neurotherapeutic method like EMI, you are essentially unlocking that box. If you open deeply traumatic neural pathways without a safety net, without the grounding presence of a trained professional to guide the pacing, the brain can be totally flooded by the original sensory data.
The sights, the sounds, the fear, it all rushes back at once.
Yes. And dissociation is the brain's ultimate circuit breaker. It's the feeling of disconnecting from reality, spacing out, or feeling entirely numb because the emotional pain is simply too high for the system to process.
Yeah.
Panic is the nervous system going into full fight or flight mode. If either of these happen during self-administration, it means your system is overloaded. The brain is capable of rapid healing, yes, but forcing the memory molten without knowing how to cool it down safely is dangerous. Which is why the author explicitly recommends that it is far easier and infinitely safer to have a friend or a therapist watch the instructional videos with you and follow the instructions in the provided PDF rather than trying to fly solo.
Having an external observer is vital. They anchor you to the present moment. They aren't wrapped up in the memory. They can watch your physical reactions, gauge your breathing, notice if your eyes are glassing over, and physically stop the procedure if they see you dissociating or panicking.
And for those who are professionals or who want to dive even deeper into the actual structure of this kind of work, the source text highly recommends a specific resource to continue the journey. Matheny points to Mike Denninger's book, Multi-Channel Eye Movement Integration.
Oh, yeah.
He recommends this whether you are already trained in EMDR or not, noting it offers an incredibly clear, well-structured expansion of eye movement-based trauma work.
It's a great resource precisely because it expands on the idea that trauma work isn't a one-size-fits-all magic trick. It's a structured, scientific approach to treating the nervous system with the respect it deserves.
So what does this all mean? We've covered a massive amount of ground today.
Yeah.
We looked at the parallel invention of EMI and EMDR in the late 80s, you know, the literal Newton and Leibniz of trauma therapy.
Yeah.
We broke down the mechanics of NLP and memory reconsolidation, learning how eye movements can physically reshape the jagged glass of our past. We explored the incredible 1995 case study of a Bosnian survivor finding deep sensory peace from severe flashbacks in just 6 minutes, proving you don't even need a shared language to heal the brain.
Amazing.
And we walked through the critical, non-negotiable safety guardrails of doing this work.
If we pull all of that together, it means that the toolbox for emotional health is evolving in ways that finally honor the physical reality of the human body. Just knowing that the brain can reconsolidate memories, this rapidly offers incredible hope.
It really does.
It means that trauma does not have to be a permanent life sentence. It means that healing doesn't necessarily require reliving the pain through endless conversation. The nervous system has a back door, and through careful observation of things as simple as eye movements, we are finally learning how to use it safely.
It is so incredibly hopeful. But I have to admit, there is one detail from the text that I just can't stop thinking about as we wrap up.
Oh, what's that?
It's stated that those NLP eye accessing cues are accurate about 80% of the time. Think about that for a second. If our eye movements are these involuntary, highly accurate indicators of exactly how our brain is processing reality and storing memories right in front of people, what does that mean for the secrets we think we are keeping?
Wow.
Even from ourselves. Are our eyes constantly broadcasting the invisible internal architecture of our minds to anyone who simply knows how to look?
Wow.
It's completely wild to think that the exact same subtle movements that might portray our deepest, most private thoughts are the exact same movements that can be used in just 6 minutes to rewire a haunting memory forever.